Bitstorm, a comedy game design podcast by two guys who know nothing about comedy nor game design. I'm Trevor Scott, and with me, as always, is Ben Slinger.
Hello, and not here, for the first time in a while, my squeaky-ass chair that you may,
yeah,
may or may not
have... you're standing today.
May or may not have heard in previous episodes, depending on how hard it was for us to edit it out, but we struggle with it every week.
I tried. I'm sorry. I keep on leaving bits of it in there.
Trevor, I don't listen to the episodes you edit. I wouldn't know.
I don't listen to the episodes that you edit.
I'm going off my own experience of editing it out. I know it's pain. So, yes, I'm utilizing the power of my standing desk today. And we'll see if it shifts the energy.
Yes.
But we are
talking about shifting the energy. We're going to shift the energy of the podcast by changing up what we actually do this time.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
I'm kind of in a game jam mood. We didn't realize this, but there was a dark web game jam like a couple of weekends ago. And so we've just been checking out all the games that have been on that dark web game jam. Now, the thing about the dark web game jam is there is only one theme and one theme only, law enforcement. It's always the theme.
It's always the theme because they kind of use it, I think, as a subversive way to come up with new methods of avoiding said law enforcement, sometimes by putting themselves into the mind of the law enforcement, sometimes by being more on the nose and just mowing them down vicariously in their game. So, the dark web game jams are interesting. I don't know how they do it. They manage to be a bit more polished than most other game jams. I don't know if it's just the collaboration in there or if they have some sort of weird secret like time lapse power that we don't know about.
That they probably all cheat anyway and have actually been building it for
it's
last year.
It's possible.
Because they know what the theme's going to be.
That's it. And they're all, you know, fucking criminals. And we know that everyone on the dark web, they don't care about the rules. But it works well for us because we get to play them and they're
we get to play. We get to play some games. So crank up your onion browser or your Tor browser or whatever you call it.
Peel off some layers.
Yep. And, you know, pull up a chair and have a listen to these games. So, Ben, do you want me to go first or do you want to go first?
Why don't you go first? I know there was one that you wanted to talk about.
Yeah, so Phonerensic Scientist.
Mm.
That's Phonerensic, not Forensic Scientist. And it was a video game about a phone repairman who also dabbles in a little bit of, you know, forensic scientist sort of stuff, dabbling into going deep into people's phones and you know, solving crimes and
yeah, it was really cool. I like this one too. And basically, you play like an Apple Genius style, you know, they didn't use Apple, of course.
No.
It was sort of a generic store, but people bring in their phones and you're using the data on them to sort of make connections and solve an overarching sort of mystery, which is really cool.
Yeah, as well as making sure that their phone is all up and running.
But, you know, they've got lots of cool little things like surreptitiously just, you know, cloning their phone onto your own machine so you can go back and look at it later. You can sort of go back through the archives in case you missed anything and essentially reload their phone in the state it was in.
There was that really cool functionality that you could, if you had enough time, you could get a perfect clone of the phone and you could bring it up in like a sandpit environment and delve deep into the files and the photos, even the ones that were deleted and all this sort of stuff, because it's a direct one-to-one copy of the phone. But if you didn't have a lot of time, you could choose the things that it brought down. So it's like, okay, so I want their browser history and I want their emails.
What I found impressive is like they had a pretty well fleshed out OS, like phone OS. Multiple, in fact, because they had like the different models and people would bring you in, you know, phones from other companies and stuff. So a lot of it was sort of almost solving the puzzle of like, oh, how does this interface work? You know, you had to figure that out first and different folder structures and You could tell that it was kind of written in that, like, hacker mindset. You know, a lot of people.
Yeah, yeah, having backdoors into certain phones and, you know, being able to punch in. I forget what the phone code was, but it was to do with the guy who developed his birth date. But you could punch in that code into some of the phones and it would bring up like a hacker menu and
yeah.
You could backdoor yourself into the phone and, install a rootkit on some of the phones so that, you know, it would call home and
yeah,
know, call back
it.
To you and,
Which you needed to then solve some of the things. It was like, oh, like, I think this person is involved, but we need more info from them. So,
root them. Like, I remember going into the game and thinking, this is really kind of cool. There's a, you know, the first couple of things are just fixing up, you know, the phone app, the photo app kept on crashing every time you opened it, and you go in and you find out that there's actually like a corrupted photo there. Yeah. So you can wipe
and
that.
Yeah,
out.
The first few you just sort of, you can snoop a bit if you choose to, but there's no hint yet of sort of the larger thing. Yeah,
yeah. And where it goes is kind of interesting. There's definitely some creepy customers that keep on coming in and, you know, you do not want to look at some of those photos. they're blurred out, luckily, but
you never know, like, getting games off the dark web, it could go in a lot of different directions. Yeah, it could go
very, very bad. But we were lucky in this case that they'd you got that music sting when you found something that was like that.
Yes,
and it was
you could
sort
have
of like
avoided if you wanted
to. You know, sort of. Pretty scary. Came out of nowhere the first time that you open something up and it's all pixelated. Well, it's like, oh, Jesus.
The use of music and stuff was really good. It actually reminded me a lot of that game. Oh, fuck, what was it called? What was that game that came out recently with all the video clips? Shit. I don't know if you played it. It was on Game Pass.
Probably not.
It was by the guy who did Her Story or the team who did Her Story. Oh,
yes.
But I think there was definitely some inspiration from that where, and this is where some of the other sort of creepy stuff came in, is, you know, you'd look at a video or a photo on there, but if you came back to it later, like in a different way, or if you like paused in at a specific spot, you'd see things that weren't there in the first watching, you know, you'd get some of that corruption coming through and you start noticing that it's not really normal, which is really cool.
I suppose what we haven't really talked about is it had a very Papers, Please setup in the fact that you were sort of sitting there, you had your computer off to the side that you basically had a cable that you could plug into the phone and all this sort of stuff. You had like the window where the person would turn up and you'd have that little bit of interaction, but you could, you know, change music on your little, it was sort of like a Winamp style thing that you could choose different tracks and all this sort of stuff. It was,
felt very, very felt really tangible. Fleshed out. Like it felt, it felt lived in and sort of everything was interactable in that way.
And I loved when you went in, you zoomed in a little bit to the computer screen and it would just blur out the background a little bit. So you could see the person still sitting there
fidgeting a bit. Yeah.
Fidgeting a little bit and all that sort of stuff. But it was just, it felt like a well fleshed out world.
Yeah.
But it also enabled you to see some certain things, like when the story really gets going, we'll give it away a little bit. The serial killer who comes to get his phone fixed continuously. Some of the things that he does while you're zoomed in to the, it just, sent shivers down my spine.
Well, again, like the supernatural sort of stuff was not front and center. It was sort of more implied by these little touches and stuff. And yeah, there were some very unnatural movements that serial killer character would make only when you were not focused on them, when they were out of focus there. And if you caught it, it would just give you this real uncanny valley sort of situation.
Yeah. Like, I don't know whether I told you this, but while I was playing, I like had to go grab a drink of water. Yeah. So I left it on the screen. I came back and this guy's eye was starting to come into focus as he was just getting closer and closer God. I'm like, oh my God. Like
that didn't happen to me. I don't know if that's just an idle thing or if it's a
I think it's the fact that I left it for like 10 minutes.
See, this is what I mean.
Just like you could see like the veins in his eye and it was just out of focus and it was just gradually coming into focus. What happened
when you like touched the mouse again?
It was back to normal.
Just instant.
He retreated.
Yeah.
He retreated pretty quickly. but that I don't want to say it gave me nightmares, but it nearly did.
Yeah.
But yeah,
I thought, how it would.
I would probably like it if they simplified the story a little bit. Like I think going down the serial killer mark was all well and good, but it could have been cool as a sort of like a cozy game that you're trying to fix as many phones as possible, kind of like a Papers, Please. And
I mean, Papers, Please isn't cozy, but I know what you mean.
Yeah. You know what I mean.
Yeah, I could see that sort of game working. And, you know, this is us going more into our own improvisational mode. But
yeah,
I could see that sort of game working pretty well as a cozy game where it's more about, oh, maybe you're matchmaking or something, or you're like discovering relationships between different customers who come in based on their phone, which is still also actually like pretty creepy because you're snipping through their stuff, but but yeah, you know, you're using
it's kind of like 1 hour photo with Robin Williams as the creepy, like
also not cozy, but yeah.
He's just trying to do it to save these people, he's also a real freaking creep.
Yeah.
So yeah, let's move on.
Yeah.
I've got a good idea that, you know, I might want to make a game like that.
Yeah, well, look, the bonus of these games living mostly on the dark web is
it no one else plays?
If you rip them off, no one's going to know. Unless, I mean, yeah, they may send hitmen after you, but...
Yeah.
I've got one
they hide on the dark web.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, they might be hitmen. I mean, this is just a bunch of assassins who like to make games in their spare time.
Probably.
There's a lot of waiting. There's a lot of sitting still in the assassin game, you know, as you wait for targets and stuff, so...
Yeah, as we learnt from Hitman, yeah.
Bonk's Breakdancing Task Force is one that I wanted to talk about.
Oh, yes, yes. So, this I mean, you can already tell where the law enforcement is.
Yes, yeah, this was pretty, in the task force. Pretty on brand, but a couple of interesting wrinkles. So,
takes
place. God, what's wrong?
What's wrong with English today?
Yeah. It takes place in the caveman era, which is fun, with obviously some, you know, contemporary themes and things. It's not full on. It's not trying to be historically accurate, as the breakdancing, you know, and the task force implies.
I mean, this is literally the start of a police force, you know. Bonk really loved his breakdancing, but he was wronged.
That's it. His cave neighbor stole the pterodactyl eggs that he'd so carefully scavenged.
Yeah.
And he's like, who's going to do something?
Who's going to have a lovely
Who's going to do something about this? Nobody except him. And what's his main skill? Breakdancing.
And what's his other main skill? Bringing people together for a cause.
Yeah. That's it. He's got charisma.
Yes. He rolled very high on charisma. Like,
And I did find it interesting that they went pretty full D&D-ish RPG with this.
Yeah.
You know, it may have just been my bonk who rolled high on charisma. It's quite possible that you could roll a different bonk. You do have to play bonk because it's in the title.
Yes. Yes.
But you do get to choose the rest of your task force from companions and things that you meet. And, yeah, a lot of the sort of moves then as you sort of take down perps, they're called grunks in this, but perps, revolve around breakdancing. Different sort of moves that you can do, and particularly the, like, if you're dodging rocks being thrown at you, and that sort of thing. There's a lot of almost Matrix-esque moves then as you get down and head spin. And
I mean, my favorite secondary character was probably Crank.
Yeah.
He Crank was a character. Would use a vine like no one else.
Mm-hmm.
You know, he basically had a lot of rope tricks. And you put that into the breakdancing, and it was just, it was beautiful.
Yeah, yeah. And then, like, using it like a whip in his offensive stuff, too, was cool. Yeah, Crank was a good character. And then Junkifer, I liked her moves because they were sort of a lot more graceful in that way, like athletic.
Yeah.
Lots of flips. I loved the use of, like, environmental stuff. If you position him well enough, you could get up on a tree branch and jump down, you know. It's really quite an impressive combat system they put together.
Yeah. And given that, you know, we assume that they did this in 48 hours. I mean, they probably didn't have to, but you could just tell, like, the unibrow physics, like, looked amazing with, you know.
Well, and just the generators, like the character generator stuff and all the different types of unibrows that you could put on your cave people.
Exactly. Now, I did notice that it was kind of hard to go middle sliders. You know, it was very Monster Factory. You had to go either extreme because everything in the middle was just vanilla. It just didn't feel right.
No, you had, you know, you want to go for the jutting brow and the thick, bushy unibrow, like eyebrow, and, you know, the small ears on the huge head and that sort of thing, because it just feels better as a cave person to sort of be a bit off-kilter.
I get kind of what they were going for. I feel like there wasn't so much a slider as, like, the extremes had values and there was a middle value, but it was like, anything towards the middle was just dead.
There was a dead zone.
It's off.
Yeah. They had a curve. They had a pretty drastic curve there.
I think there were three options and it just looked like there were more.
Yeah. Maybe they just didn't get time to implement, you know, the middle stuff. There.
I did
find cool and funny was the amount of different hairstyles they had, and that was not at all period accurate.
Oh, of course. It was very 80s and early 90s. Well, they had
so many from across. You know, I feel like they had one person working on this the whole weekend just putting together hairstyles. So,
yeah.
But, you know, that just goes into the fun of it.
Exactly. Big Boss, what'd you think? I mean, we kind of knew what was coming.
Yeah, well, it kind of all leads up to that. And again, being a game jam game, there was a lot of depth there in the mechanics, but the story was fairly short. It kind of felt like a first chapter almost.
Yeah.
But yeah, I mean, when you come across that T-Rex and you kind of have to utilize all-
And who's riding the fucking T-Rex? Your neighbor.
Of course.
Yeah.
Who, you know, they foreshadowed that with-
him escaping in the first scene.
Animal handling that he clearly is skilled in, proficient in.
When he jumped on the back of that pterodactyl, after he stole the pterodactyl eggs, you knew his animal handling must be through the roof because, you know, they should be able to smell the yolk on his breath.
That's it. That he definitely rolled well on that skill check.
Yeah.
But I mean, that was a good fight. I think, I don't know, did your Crank die in that fight?
No.
Okay. I wasn't sure because
my Junkifer did.
Okay. I wonder if someone has to die in that or if it's just the difficulty scaling of it is particular. But they had a full-on animation.
A T-Rex doing a bite is gonna do some major damage.
Yeah, because they had the, like, custom animation for it with, like, almost a custom cutscene for it. I was like, oh, this feels like not just a random thing. So, anyway, that's interesting. Yeah, it was cool. I mean, for the amount of choices that they had in there and stuff.
Yeah.
Very polished.
It was cool. Okay. My next one was Drunken Skydiving Apocalypse.
Yeah.
Now, this is one of those games where they did the time-honored tradition of game jams of just jamming the theme in right at the last second.
Yeah.
So you're basically a character who was a cop.
Right.
And yeah, you're
the main
drunken skydiving through the apocalypse. Like,
yeah, I did think that was kind of funny how there was that fairly incongruous cutscene at the beginning.
Yeah,
to sort of explain that you're a cop, and then it didn't come up again, but.
It was sort of like, yeah, you're just a cop. Now, what I really liked about this mm-hmm. was, like, the skydiving felt like, you know, quite meaty. Like, it had a lot of different mechanics. You could actually spend a bit of time, you know, moving your hands around and choosing, you know, how you were going to come down a little bit slower or spend a little bit more time in the air before pulling the parachute.
That's it, yeah. They clearly didn't have time to build a full-on aerodynamic engine in there. So, the way that they have implemented how your very analog movements of your arms and legs and head, how that affects your fall speed and your direction and stuff, like, that was really cool. Because it felt aerodynamic and made sense.
The main objective of the game is to do as much skydiving as possible while being drunk.
Yeah.
But a lot of the game was about, you know, gathering the alcohol, getting back onto the plane and not getting bitten by zombies. And
finding a new plane each time because, like, there's no one else around to drive it, to fly it. So every time you skydive, it just crashes into a mountain. Or into a field, which was cool. Like, I love when you're skydiving down and your plane finally hits the ground.
Cool guys don't look at explosions, all that sort of stuff. Yeah.
That's it.
I always turn myself away so I could, you know, see backwards and see everything, you know, going off.
Yeah,
because
get a good pose.
You always had that, that front camera view towards your face.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, the photo mode was good for that too. Like, they added that probably just for that exact reason.
What I felt was kind of cool is it actually, the whole camera made it feel like you were actually, you were playing or seeing through the eyes of someone else.
Mm-hmm.
So you were seeing through the eyes of, like, a cameraman.
Yeah.
So they were actually skydiving with you because, you know, there wasn't that.
Like,
pure third person view the whole time. It felt
more
very
grounded.
Like, falling back a little bit and then catching up.
Or not grounded, as the case may be when they're falling next to you. But, yeah, it felt like it was coming from a different perspective. And that made sense as well. I liked that they, despite it being drunk skydiving, they didn't do that, like, annoying drunk filter and stuff, which I find very frustrating a lot of the time. It was more in the controls and even in the dialogue and stuff, you know. Your character, you could kind of talk to the camera, and it was almost like you're filming for posterity.
Well, I really got the feel like the character has got a lot of nuance to him.
Mm.
Like, he was rather depressed throughout the majority of the game, but drinking was what gave him his life meaning, and, you know, the fact that, you know, as far as he was concerned, you are the last person alive. Mm. I suppose his cameraman's also alive, so.
Yeah, I mean, they never show it. It could have been, like, a bot or something.
Yeah, could have. That does actually make sense, because we did see that that skydiver on the ground with, like, the
drone.
Destiny 2, like, drone, you know, closed its eyes. So, yeah, that makes sense.
Yeah, it also makes sense as well. If you aim the camera down, you don't see any legs.
Yeah.
I thought that might have. That, at the time, I thought, oh, that, you know, often games will do that because they can't be bothered putting it in, but.
Oh, that
works.
That's actually really
it
cool.
Works for and being the fact, in fiction.
The fact that is one of the first things that you see, like, you come down and you land and you see the skydiver that's been impaled on the fence,
mm-hmm.
and you see that like drone that's sort of
I mean, that's where you scavenge your first parachute patch from as well, right? From his
and
parachute.
get a battery as well,
right? Yeah,
from the drone.
Right, that's right. Yeah. Yeah, it was cool how they did implement a lot of that scavenger gameplay. There was, you know, a lot of space, like a lot of environment for a game where the main gameplay is in the sky. I mean, I guess for looking down, they had to build a lot of stuff, but different levels of detail there was really cool.
especially because it was very easy to get down, but not very easy to get up these buildings. So it was sort of like one of those things of, if you want to get the stuff on top of that building, you better land on it from a skydiving point of view. But it wasn't easy. Like, you had to be thinking about the wind and all that sort of stuff, because it did come into play. And that's why they had flags on the top of each of the buildings. So you could see, up around this level, there's a current going this way. But, you know, if you go down lower, it could be going a slightly different way.
You say flags, but of course, being the apocalypse, like, they had very strategically placed, like, torn clothes, body parts that might, you know, blow in the wind a bit, hair.
That was a really disgusting scene, by the way. We know the scene that we're talking about, but
yeah, watch out for it if you manage to find your way into the game. But
yes, there's let's just say a scalp with very, very long, luscious hair that's sort of blowing in the wind, and then. Just below that, when you land on that building, you see, like, everything.
The rest of the, yeah. Yeah, it's pretty gross.
It was gruesome.
But, hey, it told you which way the wind was going. Exactly. Down, so it did its job.
Do you have one more?
Yeah, I've got one more. I wanted to talk about Electric Beach Conspiracy.
Nice.
So, this was fun. You were technically law enforcement, but you were, like, the lifeguard.
Yeah.
You know,
I mean, we know from Baywatch that they are effectively, you know, they can solve crimes.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah.
So you're solving beach crimes. Yeah. Now the name of the beach was Electric Beach, which is, you know, you go into it maybe hoping something about
Electric Boogaloo sort of stuff.
Yeah, I mean, that's kind of the vibe it got. It had that kind of funky,
1980s aesthetic.
Yeah, kind of 1980s aesthetic, the music and the hair and everything. But then, there was sort of this deeper conspiracy going on. It also was very 80s in that it was sort of around, they wanted to, like, shut down the beach so they could build, the public beach so they could build, you know, condos and stuff.
Yeah.
So it was very tropey in that way, but leaning into it in a fun way.
I mean, My favorite character, as much as you're supposed to hate him, was like the coked up, you know, businessman.
Yeah.
Like every single time he came down and, you know, he had a car phone, and that was his big thing.
Yep.
That, you know, he had this massive brick phone. Phone in the car that he put to hang back up and jump out of his convertible, you know, and, you know, you could tell that he was coked up because, like, I swear in that one scene, they left a little bit of a white patch on his.
Oh, yeah, yeah. Well, like, and I loved how much you could mess with him, too. Like, it was sort of incidental that they'd added this in, but, like, you could steal that phone and bury it in the sand, and you'd have to go around looking for it, and you could, you know.
I mean, that's what the wire cutters were for, weren't they? Mm. So you could snip the cord.
That's it. I think that was the only reason to find those.
Also, disarming the bomb. I forgot about that. That's the other thing that you did.
Oh, I think you can use the knife that you find for that as well. So, I guess, Which I liked often in these sort of, because it did have that kind of adventure game inventory-ish style thing to it. Often in those games, it's like, oh no, you have to use the one specific sharp thing to cut a thing that that we thought of.
You want to use the nail clippers to cut that as well. Go for it.
They didn't fall into that trap, which was good. But yeah, I really liked the way that they built up that story. Like I said, that very adventure game, point and click adventure game sort of thing. You had your inventory and stuff. The musical number was really cool.
Yep.
The animation musical was number, great
in that. The very 80s trope of, you know, raising enough money to buy back the beach for everyone and, you know, win the auction with a talent contest. Well, I say talent contest. It was just a surfing contest. We get that.
Yeah. And I like how they sort of did the flip on the whole Baywatch running up the beach, but it was the guy and he's like junk was just kind of bouncing up and down very obviously. And everyone's just like watching on. And
his shorts started falling down and he's like, oh.
Yeah. I swear they must have mocapped that animation because it was like, it was very natural.
Oh, yeah.
I almost feel like that had to be a blooper and they actually, like, they didn't mean for the pants to
fall down. I mean, this is a very Australian reference, but it got a very Matt Shervington feel of, like, the size and movement of the junk.
I don't get that reference.
You don't get Matt Shervington. He was an athlete, an Australian athlete with...
I don't do sports usually. Was he known for his junk shaking around?
For his large junk,
yes. I'm going to search for Matt Shervington junk and see what happens. Matt Shervington out of control bouncing junk on Facebook.
See, I'm not lying.
No, I believe you. I just had to see it for myself, you know. That's really fucking funny.
So, yes, that's the most Australian reference that I could get, and that gives you the exact, like, just watch Matt Shervington junk videos on YouTube and...
Yep.
So, I love the comeuppance that the coked up businessman gets in the end. Although I think it was a little bit far that they, you know... They got him with, you know, the really, really bad coke and he ended up ODing.
Well,
at least in-
yeah, they replaced it, from what I understood, they replaced it with sand and then it just sort of clogged up his whole system.
Airway, yeah.
Yeah, that was pretty gruesome, particularly after you'd, like, driven his car already into the ocean him. And, yeah.
buried his phone and-
Yeah, I couldn't quite tell slept if that with was his wife just. And- yeah, I couldn't quite tell if that was just an over the top comeuppance or if it was supposed to be sort of a satirical thing of how the villains were treated in those sort of 80s films because,
yeah,
you know, nobody's actually that villainous. You could read it as, you know, yes, he was trying to take away their thing and capitalism is shit, yeah. But like he wasn't. A fucking Nazi.
But I don't know whether you watched the credits all the way to the end, but, you know, his name in the show was Ted Williams. Mm. But right at the end, it did say, in special thanks, you know, to my wife and all this sort of stuff, and a big fuck you to Ted Williams. So I think it was actually based off a real person. It was
like a personal vendetta there.
Okay. So it was just like, fuck you, Ted Williams.
Yeah, I did miss that. I think my Tor browser disconnected before I could finish it.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah, so that was good fun.
Yeah. Yeah, I think we'll leave it there. If you want to check out any of these games, fire up your browser, your Tor browser, your Onion browser, delve down. I think it was on layer 19 this time.
This time, yeah.
They shift it up, of course, every time.
Yeah.
We all know how Onion browsers work. And let us know if you had any favorites from this jam. And also, if you want to find the rest of our episodes online on the regular old web, go to podchaser.com/bitstorm and listen to all of our episodes there.
If you like the song that we play at the start and end of each episode, you can get that for free. Just go to kuridas.bandcamp.com and you can find the song Mount Defiance off of the album Containment Failure there for free. Check out the rest of the songs while you're there.
That's right. So thank you again for joining us this week on BitStorm. I'm Ben Slinger.
I'm Trevor Scott.
And make sure to re-peel your layers.
Mm.